Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Gopi Jana Malaba Giribarudhaguti, Gopi Jana Malaba Kiribarudhaguti, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Gopi Jana Malaba Giribarudhati, Gopi Jana Malaba Giribarudhati, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Jayo Radha Madhava Kundabi Hari, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Parvipatikacharya Also Teda Satashi Shibad. His Divine Grace Abhaya Chalanada Bhaktivedanta Goswami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Se Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shiva Siddhigaur Bhakta Vrindagajai Shri Shri Radhakrishna Gopikapita Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kijai Vrindavanam Kijai Maturadam Kijai Jagannatha Swami Kijai Yamunavai Kijai Shrimati Lasi Devi Kijai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindagajai Gaur Privananda Hari Hari Bo. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So Om Gana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who has so kindly opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So we're continuing with our study of the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and we are going to put it on the screen. And text 31 is the next text. So we're going to read and comment with this intensive study of the Bhagavad Gita. So if you attend all these classes, you will know the Bhagavad Gita very well by the end of these classes, which should end in a few months from now. So text 31. Yeme matam itam nityam anutishtanti manavaha shadavanto nasuyanto Muchante te karma bhi. Yea, those who may my matam, injunctions, idam, these, nityam, as an eternal function, anutishtanti, execute regularly, manavaha, human beings, shada vantaha, with faith and devotion, anasuyantaha, without envy, muchyante, become free, te, all of them, api, even, karma bihi, from the bondage of the law of fruit of actions. Translation, those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruit of actions. So this is pretty much similar, practically the same thing as what Srila Rupa Goswami says in the beginning of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. This is the nutshell verse. He says, in Ya Vinashita Shunyam Gyanakarma Navratam Anukulyena Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Rutamam. And what does that mean? That means that devotional service is devoid, shunya. Shunya means like void, vacant, empty, like a sunyavadi is someone who thinks ultimately everything is empty, or everything is void, or everything has no purpose, or everything is meaningless, etc. Shunya. And of course that means zero, if you understand Hindi or Sanskrit, zero, shunya. So anyway, one should be devoid of bad qualities, which are described as desire for gross or subtle accruements, and also devoid of desire for liberation and devoid of desire for mystic powers and stuff like that. And that's what's described here in this verse, is without any envy. Because what does envy mean? Okay, let's unpack that word first. Envy, generally when we think of envy, it means I want something that you have, or I am very upset that you have it. So whether it's someone gets some praise, we're envious of them, or someone has a new car, a new computer, we're envious of them, or someone is Krishna conscious, we're envious of them, or someone is better at sports, we're envious of them. There's so many different types of envy. So ultimately, that envy stems from envy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the opposite of envy is very interesting. The opposite of envy is to appreciate everybody else and everything else and to give them their rights, their God-given rights, like we're talking right now about Black Lives Matter. So to give everybody, including people who have different colored skin, everything, all their rights, and actually to love everybody. Because the opposite of envy is to love and appreciate. So that's actually the point. Instead of being simply without envy, but one should become full of appreciation and love for everybody, including Krishna, of course. So, and then also becomes free, let's say, who follows this teaching faithfully, execute their duties according to my injunctions. That's also very much in line with Rupa Goswami's verse that pure devotional service is described by someone as, the performance of by someone who serves Krishna according to what he wants, their duties according to Krishna's injunctions, and also serves Krishna joyfully and actively and with devotion. And that's the prerequisite for being free from the bondage of fruit of action. Srila Prabhupada states here that the injunction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna is the essence of all Vedic wisdom and is therefore eternally true without exception. As the Vedas are eternal, so this truth of Krishna consciousness is also eternal. One should have firm faith in this injunction without envying the Lord. There are many philosophers who write comments on the Bhagavad Gita but have no faith in Krishna. And actually, Prabhupada would talk about that, how some commentators, they would write on the Bhagavad Gita, and they would actually say, well, we don't believe Krishna existed. Or they would say, one should surrender to the unborn beginningless within Krishna. Even though the Sanskrit verses say something different. So, they will never be liberated from the bondage of fruit of action. But an ordinary man with firm faith in the eternal injunctions of the Lord, even though unable to execute such orders, becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. That's an interesting statement. Even though unable to execute such orders. In other words, they want to execute such orders, but because of circumstances beyond their control, they can't. They also become liberated. And actually, even if you can't render devotional service to Krishna externally with this body, you can do it in meditation and you get the same benefit. There's an interesting story in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar Devotion, about a Brahmin who actually didn't have the facility to offer anything to Krishna. So instead of giving up hope, he began to offer to Krishna within his mind in deep meditation. And as he was doing that, he actually burnt his finger in the meditation. And then he came back to external consciousness. He burnt his finger because he was testing the preparation to make sure it was cool enough. And then he came back to external consciousness and he looked at his finger externally, the Panchamahabhuta finger, and that finger was burnt. And because of that devotion, strong devotion, in which the mental state, the spiritual meditation, actually imposed itself upon the physical realm, he got the mercy of Krishna and he went back to the spiritual world. So this is what it means when Prabhupada says, even though unable to execute such orders, one becomes liberated from the bondage of the law of karma. In the beginning of Krishna consciousness, one may not fully discharge the injunctions of the Lord, but because one is not resentful of this principle and works sincerely without consideration of defeat and hopelessness, he will surely be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So in the beginning, certain things are, let us say, problematic or difficult or struggle. In fact, Krishna says in the Gita that transcendental happiness, he says, happiness in the mode of goodness, which we are connected with transcendental happiness, he says that sometimes it's like poison in the beginning and like nectar at the end. Certain aspects of devotional service may be very difficult for people in the beginning. I mean, people who are addicted to certain activities, like intoxication, or people who are not accustomed to controlling the mind, or people who are not accustomed to waking up and meditating like that, or people who are not accustomed to controlling their dietary habits and only eating things that are offered to Krishna. It's a struggle in the beginning. But if one works sincerely and doesn't resent the principle, then ultimately one will be attracted to yogic principles. Those are yogic principles. And we even see that people who were Krishna conscious in their last lives are automatically attracted to the yogic practices and principles. I mean, for example, I hate to use my own life as an example, but for example, in my own life, I became a vegetarian 2 or 3 years before I actually was informed about Krishna consciousness. Now, that's interesting. And no one told me to be a vegetarian. It was just like a little voice inside me. Of course, that little voice, not so little, is Super Soul. In the Gita, it says that Krishna is directing everyone as the Super Soul. Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesha Arjuna Tishtati Ramayan Sarva Bhutani Yantra Rudani Maya. Krishna's in everyone's heart and he's directing the wanderings of the living entities. So when one actually was connected with Krishna consciousness in the past, then automatically you become attracted to things like vegetarianism, chanting, spiritual activities. And then the more one does those activities, the more one loses a taste for activities that are not conducive to Krishna consciousness. It's a natural progression. It's not that one has to force themselves to be more than they are actually ready for at a particular moment. And of course, we are referring to a verse that we spoke about yesterday, where Krishna says, don't disturb the minds of those who are materially attached. Just give people what they can hear. And so anyway, so if we just accept the principles of Krishna consciousness, and even if we can't follow them in the beginning, as Prabhupada said, then eventually we will be promoted to the stage of pure Krishna consciousness. So that's the great hope. So text 32. Yei tvaitad avyasuyanto nanutishtanti me matam sarva jnana vimudam stan vidinashtan achetasaha. Yei, those two, however, etat, this, avyasuyandaha, out of envy, do not, anutishtanti, regularly perform my matam, injunction, sarvajnana, in all sorts of knowledge, vimudan, perfectly befooled, tam, they are, vidi, know it well, nashtan, all ruined, achetasaha, without Krishna consciousness. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled, and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. That's a very heavy verse. Of course, as I mentioned before, envy means to want something that someone else has. Also, it can sometimes mean to use someone. In other words, we want someone, let's say eating meat, for example. One can say one's envious of the animal, not that one wants to be an animal, but one wants what the animal has, which is its life. But ultimately, the envy is of Krishna, because we all want to be the center. We all want to be the enjoyer. We all want to be the controller. As Krishna states in the chapter Divine and Demoniac Nature in the Gita, he says, someone who is not Krishna conscious feels this following way. Ishwaraham aham bogi siroham balavan suki. I am the center. I am perfect, powerful, happy. That's me. And I'm the best. Or my family's the best. Or my nation's the best. Same thing, just extensions of false ego. So one who out of envy disregards the teachings, then their spiritual progress is stopped. However, if one can't follow the teachings, as Krishna mentions in the last verse, but is not envious of the teachings and wants to follow the teachings and will follow the teachings in the future, then they can still make spiritual progress. So it's not an all or nothing thing. The flaw of not being Krishna conscious is clearly stated herein. As there is punishment for disobedience to the order of the Supreme Executive Head, so there is certainly punishment for disobedience to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A disobedient person, however great he may be, is ignorant of his own self and of the Supreme Brahman, Paramatma, and the Personality of Godhead. And we explained in the previous class what it means by the Supreme Brahman. Supreme Brahman means the all-pervading energy manifestation of the Lord. Paramatma is the manifestation of Krishna in everyone's heart and every atom. And the Personality of Godhead is Krishna. That is the most important aspect of the Supreme Lord. Due to a vacant heart, or a hard heart. Therefore, there is no hope of perfection of life for him. Next text. Text 33. Sadrisham cheshtate swasya prakriter yanavanapi prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. Sadrisham, accordingly, cheshtate, tries, swashaha, by his own prakrite, modes of nature, yanavan, learned, api, although, prakritim, nature, yanti, undergo, bhutani, all living entities, nigraha, repression, kim, what karishyati, can do. Translation, even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature. For everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? So this is a little bit different subject matter that Krishna's talking about right here. Krishna right here is talking about something called Varnashram Dharma, specifically the Varnas within Varnashram Dharma. Everyone has a nature based upon a particular combination of the three modes. And I'm talking right now about a physical nature. Physical nature. That means this body. So according to the combination, the permutations of combinations of the three modes, one has certain duties, one has certain activities that are connected with that nature. And we mentioned this before, one who is predominantly in the mode of goodness, he's called a Brahmin. So his duty is teaching others and learning, of course, performing sacrifice and participating in sacrifice and giving charity and accepting charity. Yajan, yajan, patan, patan. Dana pratigraha, which means the same thing as what I just said. So we're forced to act by that nature that we have. And one who is in the mode of passion, he wants to protect people. One in the mode of passion wants to be in charge. He's Ishwara Bhava, means he has the emotion of being in charge. He never really wants to work for someone else. He can cooperate, but not work for someone else. Just like the Pandavas, they at least wanted five villages, one for each of them, so they would be able to have their independence. So that's mode of passion. Mode of passion and ignorance, you mix them both together, and you get a Vaishya. A Vaishya is one who is interested in agricultural, cow protection, and commerce. And then in the mode of ignorance, you have a Shudra. Now, that's just in reference to this gross body. Because even if one has a body that's accustomed, that's acclimated, that is talented in ignorant activities, one's consciousness can be in pure goodness. Just like, let's take someone who is, a Vaishya. Okay. Kolavetra Sridhar, who is one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates, and Lord Chaitanya would bargain with him every day, and he would make his living by selling parts of banana trees. And so he was doing something according to his nature, and he's completely devoted to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or there was a Shudra, who was a tailor. Tailor means someone who makes clothes, who was working for Srivas Thakur. But because he was devoted to Srivas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him his mercy and he became a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the consciousness that one has can really be disconnected when one is Krishna conscious, of course, from the body that one has. Try to understand. That's very important. The body is acclimated, has certain talents, And the consciousness can always be absorbed in the pure mode of goodness, whereas the body's talents may lie in the mode of ignorance. Appears to be a contradiction, but it's not. It's just what you are good at. For example, Arjuna was a Kshatriya. That means his body was in the mode of passion. And so he was meant to act as a Kshatriya. But at the same time, Krishna is advising him in the Gita to become his devotee, to always think of him, to worship him, to surrender to him, which is pretty much Brahminical. You know, Krishna says, man mana bhavamad bhakto mad yashi mam namaskuru. You should always think of me, become my devotee, etc., etc., etc. So the consciousness can actually be in Shuddhashabha. Shuddhashabha means pure goodness, whereas the body can be enacting activities in other modes of nature. So, but whatever modes of nature we're in, we should not suppress. There's two words, repression and suppression. Okay, let's differentiate between these two words. So suppress means I'm aware of it. I'm aware that I'm holding back, let's say, my natural inclination. Or even in the case, let's say, if one's angry, one can suppress their anger. And be aware of it. I'm suppressing my anger. Please go away or else you're going to be in trouble. But repression means a sort of denial of that particular feeling or that particular nature. One should not be in a denial. That's what Krishna is saying here to Arjuna. One should not be in denial to Arjuna that your nature is as a Kshatriya. Because he's thinking, remember the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, he's thinking, let me get the HELL out of here and just go to the forest and be like a sage in the forest and not worry about anything. But that sort of renunciation is not recommended by Krishna. Later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about real renunciation or renunciation in the different modes of nature. In the mode of passion, renunciation would mean running away from something because it's too difficult. Because it causes you pain even though you're supposed to do it. That's renunciation in the mode of passion. Just like, it's too difficult, it's painful. Let me just run away from it and escape. That's renunciation in the mode of passion. And of course, renunciation and goodness is to do the right thing regardless of happiness, distress, or other dualities that may occur. So, in other words, just be aware of your nature. Find out what you do. It's not some fancy thing. It's just what you can do for Krishna. Be absorbed in it 24 hours a day. Of course, in emergency circumstances, one could do other things. I mean, I'll give you an example here at the temple. That when we first had our deity worship, I used to sometimes dress the deities. Now, that is not my skill set, as was pointed out very nicely by the head pujari. And so, but I did it because it was an urgent situation. We had very few people here. Now we have plenty of people, plenty of very expert people. So I don't do that anymore. And I do things that are according to my nature, like giving this class at night and arranging things for the temple and speaking to the devotees like that, and when I can travel around the world and encourage people in Krishna consciousness. So that's more according to my nature, or studying. So under normal circumstances, I will not repress or suppress my nature, and I'll be doing things that actually I can keep my mind absorbed in 24 hours a day. Oftentimes people ask, how do you understand what your nature is? And my simple answer is, just try to think of what you can do 10 hours a day without going crazy. Because you can do a lot of things. I mean, just like in my own life, I can do a lot of things. A lot of things. You know, I know how to do a little deity worship. I know how to cook. I know how to fix cars, even, because I used to do that before I joined the Krishna Conscious Movement. I had a sports car, and I used to take out the engine, do all sorts of things like that. That was my youth. And so I know how to do that. I know how, I mean, practically a lot of things. I know how to fix computers. But if I tried to do those things for a long period, it would be very disturbing. And ultimately, I would be forced to follow my nature in some other way. So it's better I find something to do physically with my body and with my mind that is in accordance with my nature. That's all. And so that's what each and every one of us should do. We figure out what you can really do the whole day long and be blissful and be absorbed. Have your mind just completely, just completely forgetting everything else. Just like we talked about, happiness or satisfaction comes from something called perma. I don't know if any of you remember that, what that perma is, and we'll give another class on that. But one of the aspects of perma is that one should be absorbed in whatever one's doing. That is very, very important. So that's what it means to follow your nature. Don't repress or else it'll come out. So, unless one is situated on the transcendental platform of Krishna consciousness, he cannot get free from the influence of the modes of material nature, as is confirmed by the Lord in the 7th chapter, 7:14. Therefore, even for the most highly educated person on the mundane plane, it is impossible to get out of the entanglement of Maya simply by theoretical knowledge or by separating the soul from the body. Separating the soul from the body means intellectually separate in this particular context. Intellectually, I'm not the body. I'm not the body. And my body has the inclination to protect people, Kshatriya, let's say, theoretically. But I'm not. I'm a Brahmin. I want to be a Brahmin. But it's not going to work. Until one becomes Krishna conscious. If one is completely Krishna conscious, then one can be happy, absorbed, doing anything. Because one's real life at that point is internal, not external. Right now, our real life is external to the greatest extent. And of course, I may be not referring to some of you who are advanced bhakti yogis. But for the rest of us, our life is, you know, what did you do today? Well, today I did this. You know, today I went out and supervised the temple. You know, I'm just talking about my own life. I read a little bit. I went out and worked with our construction people to make sure they were doing the right thing. Then after that, I went swimming in a swimming pool. And after that, I talked to some nice devotee about her life and Krishna consciousness, encouraged her to have good sadhana. And after that, so you see, like if someone asks you, what did you do today? It's just like the external stuff. But if one is actually completely Krishna conscious, what did you do today? Well, I was dancing with, no. I was meditating on Krishna, serving Krishna with love the whole day. So, you know, it's a different perspective in this way. So, in other words, you can't intellectually separate the soul from the body. You have to act according to the body's natural inclinations, and in this way, one will be purified. There are so many so-called spiritualists who outwardly pose as advanced in the science, but inwardly or privately are completely under particular modes of nature, which they are unable to surpass. Academically, in other words, it comes out. They can suppress it for some time, and sometimes they repress it, which means, as I said before, like denying it. Oh, no, I don't have any desires. I don't want to eat tasty food. No, I'm not interested in these things anymore. You know, they'll be thinking like that. I'm not interested in swimming every day. So it comes out. It pops out. Maybe after 2 or 3 years, boo, it pops out because they're suppressing it or repressing it for too long. Academically, one may be very learned, but because of his long association with material nature, he is in bondage. Krishna consciousness helps one to get out of material entanglement, even though one may be engaged in his prescribed duties in terms of material existence. Therefore, without being fully in Krishna consciousness, one should not give up his occupational duties. No one should suddenly give up his prescribed duties and become a so-called yogi or transcendentalist artificially. It is better to be situated, because here Prabhupada is referring to yogi and transcendentalist, someone who just gives up everything, goes to the forest, goes to the Himalayas, and neglects his regular life. It is better. And also, one's nature is not only the, you know, the varnas, but there's also the ashrams. Ashrams means whether one is a single student, whether one is married, whether one is retired, or whether one is a sannyasi like myself. So there's a natural situation for everybody. And anyone can make equal spiritual progress from his particular natural situation. In fact, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was touring South India, some people wanted to give up everything and join him. And he just sent them right back home and said, really, continue what you're doing. Stane stita. Just remain where you are. Stane stita. Shruti gatam tan van manopir. But engage in the process of bhakti. In other words, don't change your occupational duty, but just change your cultivation of consciousness by engaging in sadhana bhakti. That means practice bhakti and ultimately ecstatic bhakti, spontaneous bhakti, and ultimately shuddha bhakti or pure bhakti. So, it is better to be situated in one's own position, not try to attain Krishna consciousness, attain Krishna consciousness under superior training. Thus, one may be freed from the clutches of Krishna's maya. So just stay where you are. Not in reference to geography, but whatever is your natural situation, whether you are a farmer, whether you are just a worker, whether you are a person in charge of the government or a person who protects others from harm or a person who teaches, don't change it. Or if you're a single student or if you're married, whatever fits you. And then you can actually proceed in a stable way. And this very much is connected with meeting one's basic needs. Everyone has basic needs and also transcendental needs and also psychological needs and also emotional needs. So these needs, to use a word twice, these needs need to be fulfilled to be able to be stable and steady in Krishna consciousness. The example Prabhupada gives in this respect is from the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, in which there is a story of an elephant who is named Gajendra being attacked by a crocodile in the water. So the crocodile is winning because the water is the crocodile's natural environment. And so the crocodile is pulling the elephant into the water. The elephant somehow or other remembers the prayers from his past life. He was King Indradunya, and he prays to Krishna. Krishna comes and saves him. But apart from that particular aspect of the pastime, this pastime, or the elephant being attacked in the water by the crocodile, indicates, according to Srila Prabhupada, that one should be properly situated to be able to be peacefully, and you probably use the word, fight Maya. So to fight Maya, one has to have the help of Krishna and be Krishna conscious. So one has to seek one's position in which one is happy and able to engage things in Krishna's service simultaneously and cultivate bhakti by the chanting, hearing, remembering, etc. process. So both things have to be there, the internal cultivation and the external engagement according to one's psychophysical nature. Okay, and here's another verse. Indriyasyendriyasyarte ragadvesha vyavasitau tayorna vashamagachet tau yasya paripantinau. Okay. Indriyasya of the senses, indriyasya arte, in the sense objects, raga, attachment. Dvesha, also detachment. Vyavasthitau, put under regulations, tayo. Of them, na, never, vasham, control, agachet, one should come, tau, those, he, certainly, asha, his, paripantinau, stumbling blocks. There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So here Krishna is indirectly referring to the mind. Now, we have a brain, hopefully. We have a mind. We have an intelligence, and we have a false ego. And we have a real ego, and then there's Krishna. Let me describe. These are the eightfold material elements which Krishna talks about in the Gita. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego. So as far as ourselves are concerned, we have this gross body, Pancha Mahabhuta, earth, water, fire, air, ether. Fine. And then there's the mind, and the brain is actually part of the gross body. It's a machine. It's there. And if the brain doesn't work properly, the consciousness gets affected, obviously. Just like a filter that filters light changes the color of the light, even though the light itself may be pure white, if you put a green filter in front of it, it changes it. So the brain is something that sort of filters the consciousness of the living entity. And then there's the mind. So the mind's business is to accept and reject things. So here we find attachment and aversion, which are connected to that. I want this. I don't want that. So based upon the senses and the objects. Senses and their objects means you got the nose, the object of the nose is the sense of smell, something that smells good, something that smells bad. Just like from my perspective, a rose smells very nice, gardenia smells very nice, and someone brings a little onions or garlic, bad. So that's attachment and aversion. So the whole point is the mind is thinking, accepting and rejecting things, which is the same thing as attachment and aversion, according to what pleases the senses. But in order to regulate that, one has to consider what pleases Krishna. And there are principles, just repeating Krishna's words here, there are principles that tell us, indicate what pleases Krishna, what doesn't please Krishna. For example, we are vegetarians because Krishna is pleased with people who eat vegetarian food offered to him. So that pleases Krishna. And intoxication doesn't please Krishna. Gambling doesn't, because it takes us further away from Krishna. So if you have certain principles that you follow, I mean, even there are moral principles like do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Some people jokingly say, do unto others before others do it to you. This is not our philosophy. But we all have these principles. Like truthfulness is a principle. To be truthful is very important. To be compassionate to others is a principle that we should all abide by. And these principles, and of course the principle of devotion to Krishna and pleasing Krishna, regulates, apart from the specific principles, the general principles. General principles means like compassion and stuff like that. These principles, whether they be specific to a particular activity or a general principle, that both of them regulate our attachment and aversion. In other words, if we become attached to doing something and it's our principle not to do that, or it will actually act against Krishna consciousness, then we, as we read in the previous chapter, we pull our senses in like the tortoise would pull its senses in. And we don't contemplate that particular sense object. Or if something would be good for us, we regulate that by doing that thing, even though we may, under normal circumstances, be averse to it. For example, if they come up with a vaccine for this coronavirus, I don't like people jabbing me with needles. It's actually, I'm averse to the whole thing. I probably was also averse to it. However, there's a principle of being healthy and not dying or living as long as possible. So I will actually regulate my aversion. I will tolerate my aversion and take the vaccination. And it's not a conspiracy, the vaccination. They're not going to put like little chips so they can see where I am. Although many people are really paranoid about these things. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because they are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. So in other words, attachment and aversion may be there. That's natural. The mind is there. It's going to be attached to certain things. It's going to be averse to other things. Like, you know, you're supposed to wake up in the morning. You'll be averse to it. But you tolerate that aversion in the mind, and you do, again, the same point, do the right thing according to your sense of identity. Who are you? Then you know what is the right thing to do according to compassion, according to pleasing Krishna, according to honesty. You do the right thing even though your so-called natural mental inclination may be the opposite. So purport. Those who are in Krishna consciousness are naturally reluctant to engage in material sense gratification, but those who are not in such consciousness should follow the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures. In other words, if one's Krishna conscious, you don't need to give them any rules. Oh, let's give an example. Arjuna, okay. Here's Arjuna. He's from a high-class society. So in America, in the West, and also in the Middle East and everywhere, people have these 10 commandments, and one of them is, you know, honor your father and mother. So because Arjuna is high class, he doesn't need to be told that by Krishna. Krishna's not telling him or giving him the 10 commandments because he's following them already, because he's high class, and it's his nature to follow them. But one who's not high class, you need the 10 commandments, you know. It's one God, okay. So you have to see, like, laws or rules or regulations are made for those who are unregulated, who can't control themselves. Why do you have a law that you cannot speed beyond a certain limit? The reason you have that law is because people would do it. They can't control themselves. And even if you have the law, people do it until they get pulled over by the police. For example, in a certain religion, I'm not going to tell you which religion it is, you can guess. It says, one of the rules is, don't have sex with your mother. Or your daughter. Now, I don't have to tell people that because they're naturally following these things. But when you get to really low life people, then you need more rules. With high class people, you need less rules. You're not going to tell Arjuna to honor his father and mother. Now, that would be ridiculous. It would be an insult. Like if you came up to me and you said, "Oh, Maharaj, you should be a vegetarian." That's an insult. Because naturally, I am one. So rules are only meant for people who are not following them. Otherwise, if people are naturally following them, then you don't need laws because, in that case, you know, anarchy would be ideal. But because you're dealing with primarily very low-class people in this age of Kali, you need so many laws. I mean, maybe too many nowadays. But anyway, you need so many laws because otherwise people will revert to their low-class nature. Unrestricted sense enjoyment is the cause of material engagement, but one who follows the rules and regulations of the revealed scriptures does not become entangled by the sense objects. For example, sex enjoyment is a necessity for the conditioned soul, and sex enjoyment is allowed under the license of marriage ties. According to scriptural injunctions, one is forbidden to engage in sex relationships with any woman other than one's wife. All the women are to be considered as one's mother. But in spite of such injunctions, a man is still inclined to have sex relationships with other women. These propensities are to be curbed. You know, Prabhupada is recognizing these natural animal propensities that people have in certain types of bodies. Otherwise, they will be stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. You know, it's a natural propensity, but one has to just not succumb to those propensities. That's intelligence. Intelligence says, no, it's not right. As long as the material body is there, the necessities of the material body are allowed, but under rules and regulations. And yet, we should not rely upon the control of such allowances. One has to follow these rules and regulations unattached to them, because practice of sense gratification under regulations may also lead one to go astray, as much as there's always the chance of an accident, even on the royal roads. So in other words, we should understand the purpose of these rules and regulations to help us gain intellectual and mental strength to be able to do what we want to do with our mind, body, and senses. Instead of the mind, body, and senses dictating to us, we should take charge. That is real autonomy. If you are controlled by your mind, body, and senses, then you have no autonomy. You're forced to act helplessly. You're pulled here and there by your tongue, especially by the tongue. The tongue, the belly, the genitals, mind, anger, words like that. So one has to be very careful, even though you have a license for Sanskrit. Just like you may have a license to drive a car, but you have to be careful to use it properly. It's a restricted license. No one has an unlimited license to drive a car. Unlimited would mean you could drive at any speed you want, on any side of the road you want. Don't take advantage. Although they may be very carefully maintained, no one can guarantee that there'll be no danger even on the safest road. The sense enjoyment spirit has been current for a very long time, owing to material association. Therefore, in spite of regulated sense enjoyment, there's every chance of falling down. Therefore, any attachment for regulated sense enjoyment must also be avoided by all means. In other words, one does do regulated sense gratification. All of us, you know, even eating is like that, eating prasadam. But we ultimately try to control the senses. That's what yoga means. According to Patanjali, yoga means stop the turning of the mind. The mind is actually controlling the senses. But attachment to Krishna consciousness or acting always in the loving service of Krishna detaches one from all kinds of sensory activities. Therefore, no one should try to be detached from Krishna consciousness at any stage of life. The whole purpose of detachment from all kinds of sense attachment is ultimately to become situated on the platform of Krishna consciousness. End of purport. Tomorrow we will start with text 35. So now we can have some questions. Hold on a second. Let me take us all out of the mute situation where you can unmute yourself and ask a question. Okay, who has a question?
Gurudev.
Yes. Hi, Praneshra. Sounds like you.
How to identify and deal with the low class of people and high class of people?
That's the same question you've been asking for the last 3 weeks. So how do you identify? A high class person means someone who doesn't let his senses and mind control him or her. And a low class person is just dragged here and there. You can't trust what's going to happen because they may have some promise that they make to you, but they won't be able to fulfill the promise because their senses and their mind are controlling them. So a high-class person can slip sometimes, but their endeavor is to control their mind and senses and to focus their mind and senses on doing the right thing, at least morally, if not spiritually. At least they should be moral persons, ethical, moral persons. That's how you distinguish. Okay? Good question.
Yes.
Okay, but you're asking the same question all the time about association. Okay.
Because it's a bit common to see, like, all.
Yes, it's common. You're a businessman, so you come in touch with so many different types of people. Okay, who else has a question?
Hare Krishna.
Oh, Hrishikesh.
Hare Krishna.
Nice to see you. So, what's your question?
I just wanted to understand my natural inclination, you know, according to my own prakriti, and my mind aversion.
Yeah.
You know, I might be averse to not getting up in the morning, or maybe. But I just wanted to understand how do I balance these two things?
The natural inclination, your varna, is based on the work that you're doing. You know. Guna karma vibhagasha. So, what do you like to do if you could do it all day long? What inspires you?
I like many things, Krudik. I don't know whether I can just do one thing for 10 hours or 20 hours a day.
But what inspires you the most?
Association of devotees. Like the association with you.
Very nice. Very nice. That's good. So you should... it sounds like you're a Brahmin by nature. And you're probably frustrated because you have to do all these material things to exist. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah, Gurudevan, I enjoy the association. My only thing is, if you tell me that, okay, I have to associate with devotees 20 hours a day throughout the day, then that will be too much. I have to balance it out with different things.
Yeah, well, that's natural. But you can absorb your mind when you're having good association.
Yes, Gurudev, yes. That is for sure, yes. That is for sure.
So that means you have a nice brahminical inclination. And that should be cultivated and encouraged. Oh. And then you should think, as an impetus to getting up early, that, of course, you have to go to sleep early to get up early. That's another point. You should think that, in this way, I'll be able to spiritually associate with people that give me happiness. Because even if you're not physically associating with someone, associate with people through... someone doesn't have themselves on mute. It's always a problem. I said that's Sumuk who's joining us. Okay. So he's on mute now. So if you're able to associate... let's say if you're thinking, if I wake up early, I can associate with all these devotees either on the internet or hear classes from Prabhupada or be inspired in that way. You got to be able to wake up, you have to have something that inspires you in the morning. something that
I get
really
inspired
inspires
when
you.
I have some. I'm in physically association with the, you know, I mean, associating with devotee, like, you know, in the same physical area, and everyone is getting up, then I get inspired also automatically. But I get a lot of strength when I'm alone.
It's hard when you're living by, you know, living either by yourself or there's others not getting up early. One needs that encouragement. Yes, it's true. So strive your best. Try your best to wake up like that. I mean, if you can, and if you don't have physical association, just tune in to our Mangalarti every morning. Every morning at 4:30, I am broadcasting Mangalarti on my Facebook page.
Okay.
So you're welcome to join us. You can something like that may encourage you to wake up early. Like think, oh, it's 4:30. I gotta turn on my computer. You know, so you know, if you're really interested in something, then it encourages you to be alert at that particular time. I mean, here's a mundane example that I'm not proud of. So. Just recently, there was a space shot in which SpaceX, they sent some astronauts to the space station on a commercial vehicle. I think you know about that, right?
Yeah.
So when I heard about the time that it was going to be shot, I went on my computer and watched it. It's completely mundane. I mean, I'm not actually proud of it, but, you know, as devotees know, I don't hide my maya. So, because I watched it, because I thought it was quite interesting. I made sure that I put aside everything else and watched the wonderful astronauts going up in the sky. So it depends. Anyway, got to be honest. So yes, you can associate with us every morning, Mangalarti. Think about that. That may be an impetus. Because when you're by yourself, it's kind of hard. One needs association.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Mother Krishna Priya, you have a question now. You raise your hand.
This is Second Day Senses. So my question was kind of maybe something you can speak on a little bit, that often in one's youth, when one has a lot of energy, their inclination manifests in the external service that they do. Then some often as one ages and they're not able to engage in the same way they used to, it'd be difficult to sometimes transition into what they're meant to be doing.
That is a fact. That is a fact. So therefore... Yes, I can verify that. So, in other words, one can meditate on those same things. You know, physically you're not able to do something. You can meditate on those things, and this will help you connect. Because the inclination remains the same, just like you like to dress the deities. And you used to dress the deities.
I always wake up in that morning, too. If I know I'm dressing deities... Somehow, I spontaneously wake up.
That's nice. So you used to dress the deities every day, but that's not possible right now.
Yeah.
So you can meditate on that. And I mean, because you have a natural attraction for the deities, then meditate on the deities. Or make plans how to buy things for the deities, not with my money, but make things how to... make plans how to buy things for the deities or get people to donate. I mean, there's different things you can do if one's not able to be as active as before, but the attachment to the deities continues, as you see. Okay?
Yes, we did.
All right. Let's let Sumuk ask a question. He'll be the last one tonight. Sumuk he raised his hand. He's in Fiji. And it looks like he's at the office right now. You have a question? You have to unmute yourself, Sumuk.
Okay. Please accept my humble wishes, Gurudev. I have one question.
Jai.
Can you hear me?
Good to see you.
Jai Gurudev.
Yeah, you're in the office now?
Yes, Gurudev. I was listening
Very
to
nice.
The class, and you said unless one is fully Krishna conscious, one should not give up prescribed duties. And that I would know, these prescribed duties include our work as well at FEA.
Let me explain. FEA is the Fiji Electrical Association. That is, they supply electricity for the rest. And I believe Sumuk's in charge of purchasing, right, at FEA?
Yes, Gurudev.
Yeah?
Yes.
So he's in charge of purchasing at FEA. So is that his prescribed duty? Well, his prescribed duty is to maintain his family and do deity worship in the morning. And that work at FEA is actually supporting that. So there's activities that support our prescribed duty, and those are actually part of the prescribed duty. They're secondary, but they're connected to the prescribed duty. Just like I have to sleep at night, because if I don't sleep, I won't be able to do my prescribed duty. I have to eat. If I don't eat, I won't be. And you could say, in one sense, my sleeping is my prescribed duty too, or part, a secondary aspect of the prescribed duty. So yes, you're working at FEA is your prescribed duty.
Okay.
It's connected.
Okay. How does one can know he's above the three modes?
Can know that he's above the three modes?
Yes.
Is that the question?
Yes, Gurudev.
One can know that he or she is above the three modes when there's no more hankering or lamenting for material things.
Okay.
The Sochati Nakanchati, isn't it?
Okay. Yes.
Brahmabhutta Prasanatma, Ashochati Nakanchati, Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu, Madhbhaktim Labhate Param. That's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. Brahmabhutta Prasanatma, one is actually always happy.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shochati Nakanchati, that's how you know.
Okay.
There's no hankering for yourself. You may hanker to become Krishna conscious, you may hanker for things for other people's benefit, benefits, but Shochati Nakanchati, and no lamenting. Okay, that's how you know.
Yes, Gurudev. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for the question. It's always good to see you. Every day we're having this, except for your Monday,
okay.
Which is our
Sunday. Okay.
It's an hour earlier. It's an hour earlier on your Monday, and it's our Sunday, and we have it an hour earlier in the evening, but it's an hour earlier for you in the morning.
Okay.
So Sunday, Monday for you would be 9 o'clock in the morning. We'll have
okay.
our class, and
okay.
every other day. It's every other day of the week for you would be at 10 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, great.
Okay, we are going to end now. Thank you all for joining us. And you see Radha Galokananda behind me. See, right behind
yes.
me.
Yes.
Keep it. These are my worshipful deities, and by Radha Galokananda's mercy, I am still in this body. So, all glories to the divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, ki jai.
Jai, good day.